Hello, folks. This is Ivan Moore, and welcome to a brand new show here on KNBA 90.3 FM. This is the Wilderness Playlist. Imagine you're banished out there into the wilds of Alaska. You become stranded behind a raging Teklanika River with only a bus for shelter. But you can take five songs with you on your iPod, your phone, whatever, and take them out there and be entertained by them until you're rescued at some point in the future, but you don't know when people are going to come for you. Which five songs would you pick? That's the question. And we're going to have guests of a variety of sorts in the months to come. Some inevitably, of course, drawn from the world of politics, some from the world of business, some from the world of media, all of them, well, most of them, perhaps, people who you may recognize, people that you might be aware of and know of. But they will pick five songs, and hopefully in the process of picking those five songs, we will learn a little bit more about them than you might otherwise have. And my guest, I am thrilled to announce on this first show, someone who almost all of you will know, Mr. John Tracy.
I am the test guest.
The test guest, the first one. and of course, for the few of you out there who don't know, John Tracy, for years and years and years and years, was the face of Channel 2 News and became one of the most well-known people, I think, in Alaska, beyond the kind of most well-known politicians, perhaps. Welcome to the show, John.
Great to be here, Ivan.
Good to have you here. Tell us a little bit, although it's really not the focus of probably what we'll end up talking about today. Tell us, just give us a synopsis of your career beyond the working for Channel 2.
Beyond? Well,
when did you start with them?
I came in the summer of 1985 as a weekend anchor. Worked with a guy by the name of John Carpenter. He was the weekend sports guy. Mm-hmm. And Mark Evangelista, who was our weather guy. And the three of us kind of threw this show together every weekend for Channel 2. And the rest, as they say, is history.
When did you come to Alaska? And what was the reason?
Well, I came for the job. Came in 1985. I was in Seattle, where I grew up. I was a producer at Como TV there. Mm-hmm. And just had graduated from University of Washington a year and a half before. And was pretty much told you had to be, on the air somewhere working as a reporter to get a reporter job. That's what I wanted to do. So had to leave Seattle. And, of course, the Great Alaska Story, planned to come here for a year. And 33
the rest
years,
is history.
Here I am. Yeah.
Do you remember the moment you saw the announcement for the job opening in Anchorage, Alaska?
You know, I don't remember that moment. But I remember the moment that I walked into the Channel 2 newsroom for the first time. Mm-hmm. It was in the basement of the 4th Avenue Theater.
There you go, yeah.
If people can imagine
back
that.
Back in those days.
Built as a bomb shelter. And I walked in, and there were 12 people in total at Channel 2, and half of them smoked, and there was no ventilation whatsoever. And I walked in, and this is coming from Seattle, of course, the Jet City modern station. And I walked into this basement in this smoke-filled room, and I wondered, what did I just get myself into?
And you were there for better part of 20 years, over 20 years.
23 years.
Wow.
Yep. As I like to say, I worked my way down to news director.
There you go.
Yeah.
And then you left there, and what happened after that?
Well, the station was sold in 2008, and at that point had to make a decision and could have stayed at Channel 2 in a different capacity, was offered a different position, but decided to get into the world of advertising, purchased a stake in Bradley Reed, which was at the time one of the larger ad agencies, and did that for 9 years, had a good time, and then sold my interest to my partner in 2017.
Cool. And all this time, you've played in a band, Chill Factor.
I
now,
did.
Here's my big question for you.
Yeah, sure.
Have you, over this whole time in Alaska, considered yourself to be a musician who happens to do journalism to make money, Or do you consider yourself a professional journalist who plays in a band on the side?
I considered myself a drummer who pretended to be a musician. Before I even went to college, when I graduated from high school, I went on the road with a rock and roll band. Mm-hmm. And I probably traveled for the first probably 6-7 years out of high school. 4 of those years, I was on the road playing music, mm-hmm. In bars primarily. Mm-hmm. You know, we did a lot of covers, just wrote a few original tunes. But that's what I want it to be. When you turn 24, 25, and you kind of look around and say, I'm still doing the same thing.
Can't do this forever.
So I decided I certainly wasn't cut out for that.
Right.
There was a pivotal moment when my band went to Los Angeles. And we go onto Sunset Strip, and it's on a Monday night, which, of course, is dead. We go into a club on Sunset Strip. There's a $5 cover charge. We walk in as a band, and we're the only guys in this bar. And there's a band on stage, and they are so good. They are so good.
I was wondering whether you're going to say they were so good or they were so bad.
Oh, they were so good that we looked around and said, we're not even close to this.
Right.
They come over and they sit down because we're the only ones there. And we're just like, tell us about what you're doing. And mm-hmm. they said, well, basically, we're studio musicians. These were the Picaro brothers, who then had a little band at the time that hadn't broken yet called Toto.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
So we're thinking, okay, so we're this little band from Seattle who, you know, compared to these guys, they're playing for $5 at the door. Mm-hmm. I realized at that point I probably was not going to make it in that business because these guys were so good.
All our lives have those key seminal moments, those yep. crossroads where you either going to go that way or you're going to go that way. And the best ones are where your choice of whether to go that way or that way
yeah.
is not decided by you,
yeah.
but is actually decided by someone
yeah.
else. What was your process? Tell me about the process of picking your 5 songs. Was it easy? Was it difficult?
You know,
Was the fifth the hardest?
It was difficult only because I don't think I did my homework well. These would not necessarily be the songs I would take on a desert island or out in the wilderness, but these are the songs that I think sort of meant the most to me as they sort of formed who I was as a person and as a musician. And they came along, and of course, at pivotal moments in my life that actually were meaningful. So they're not even necessarily songs that I would keep on, you know, that mm-hmm. I would even listen to now, but they're, when they come on, they take me immediately back to that
sure.
point in time.
All right. What's your first one?
Well, my first one is The Beatles.
Oh, excellent.
You should appreciate that,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
My first sort of coming of age with music was when I was 9 years old, and my sister had this album, Rubber Soul.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't the Beatles' first album, but
my sisters had the album as well.
Did they?
Yeah.
So it's
a good thing having sisters.
It is. And I would listen to it when she was gone because she wouldn't let me listen to it when she was there. And, you know, this was sort of my awakening. And they had songs on Rubber Soul. I don't know if it's the greatest Beatles album, but it had Norwegian Wood. It had
right.
In My Life, you know, mm-hmm. which was sort of John Lennon's. You could tell where John Lennon was going.
In My Life, I think, was ranked as the number one Beatles song of all time, wasn't it? In various kind of.
And I almost put that on my list mm-hmm. as the first song. I put Drive My Car only because I love cowbell. Okay?
You love cowbell?
No, seriously.
I've got to listen to the song.
Listen to the song.
Yeah.
I chose Drive My Car because in almost every band that I played in, we did some version of Drive My Car. Because once you start playing it, people can't sit down. They mm-hmm. just have to get up, and they all like to honk their horn. So,
oh, okay.
So I remembered as a kid that I just kind of loved that song. Now, today, In My Life means more to me than Drive My Car.
Right. There you go. Let's have it.
Drive my car, and maybe I love you.
That's song number one from our guest, John Tracy, here on the Wilderness Playlist. John, one of the formative things about me and my life is that I was the only boy and had four older sisters. So I, too, got kickdowns from them. What are you?
I'm at the end. I'm at the end of the line.
So you're a youngest boy, yeah, too, yep. Sisters only, brothers too?
One sister, but then a lot of half-brothers and sisters, but okay. Just kind of two of us at home growing up, yeah.
Cool. And how much older was she than
She's
you?
She's a year and a half older than me. Now, okay, but did you notice the cowbell?
Yes, I did.
Okay, more cowbell.
Yeah, no,
I mean, every
it's
song
one of those
needs
things
more
you never know about.
That's one of the unsung cowbell songs of our life.
It's actually interesting that even in 1965, when that when that record came out, they were doing innovative things.
Oh,
it
absolutely.
It wasn't just only kind of 68, 69 and Sgt. Pepper and backwards tracks and all that kind of stuff.
You would never hear harmonies like, but you can do something in between when mm-hmm. they hit that dissonant harmony right there. Mm-hmm. You would never hear that on a rock and roll album. That was like, oh, that was mind-blowing.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's very good. The Beatles were awesome. I actually ran into a very interesting show on the telly the other day all about John Lennon in the later years in the 70s when he was and doing his bed-ins with Yoko during the Nixon administration.
At the Dakota.
How he became like a subversive person, and they tried to kick him out, and he was fighting immigration stuff, and they had quite a journey, those boys.
All he talked about was peace.
Yes.
It's not that subversive.
Yeah. So, moving on to your second choice, give this an intro, because this is, you've picked some ones. Now, of course, I'm English, right?
Yeah.
Beatles?
I picked
I'm
up
there.
On
I
that.
I grew
sure.
up with them, okay? This
You didn't know these
this,
guys?
This next outfit,
no.
I'm not sure about them.
If you're an American of our age, you know this song
well, hey,
from the very opening
This is
note.
Why I'm doing this show, because one of the side benefits is I get a little bit of a kind of broadening of the old musical whatnot.
This is the song that made me decide I wanted to play drums.
Ah,
And it is because it has a 2.5 minute drum solo in the middle of it.
Okay.
I don't know if it'll be on this cut because it was a 17 and a half minute song. And if anybody listening, both of you, if you haven't picked out what this song is, if I tell you it's a 17 and a half minute song with a 2.5 minute drum solo, you know the song is Inagata Davida by Iron Butterfly.
Now, it's interesting you should talk about long songs because when I was a kid, I kind of liked long songs too.
Yeah.
And one of the long songs that I had was a kickdown from one of my older sisters, which was a track that was the entire A side of an album. It was, I think, just shy of 20 minutes long.
So what was it?
It beat this little 17-minute number you've got here. And that was a song called Ma by Rare Earth.
Oh, Rare Earth. Mm. Rare Earth was one of my favorite bands.
Well, there you go. You should have picked it.
I could have put that song on, okay. Rare Earth.
So this
I
is,
just want to celebrate. Oh, what a song.
Yeah. No,
come on.
It was great. So this is Inagata Davida.
Nah, you gotta say it right.
Okay, say it then.
Inagata Davida.
Oh, okay. Inagata Davida.
Baby.
Don't you know that I'm loving you?
So there you have it.
The solo, the drum solo, was iconic, right? And as a kid, I was 12 years old, had my first drum set from Sears.
Okay.
I learned the entire drum solo and would play it for all the kids in the neighborhood.
There you go.
I was a star at the age of 12.
That's fun. What was it like being 12 years old in 1968?
Well, it was idyllic for me.
Especially with a musical thing that you had budding.
You know, it was, I grew up in a suburb of Seattle, in North Seattle, and we had, at one point I counted, on our street, which wasn't a long street, we had over 100 kids. All, you know, we're all close within the same age. And so there was always a football game, a baseball game, kickball, whatever going on. You know, it was just a terrific time. And music, of course, at that time in the mid-60s, late 60s, it was really an influential time for music. And so we were just surrounded by it. And once I decided I wanted to play drums, it was just, that's all I did. I would come home from school. I would go to my basement. The way I had to play drums was we had a single record player in the house, but it was upstairs. And so I ran a speaker wire down to the basement, and I had a board. And on the board, I had nailed a bunch of transistor radio speakers. Anytime I could find a transistor radio at a junk shop or something, I would buy the speaker. So I nailed these speakers to the board. So I'd run upstairs and I'd put that board as close to my head as I could. I'd start the record, which is why I never really learned the first 30 seconds of a song, because it always took me that long to get down to the basement to get on the drums. And that's how I learned to play drums, is I would just play along with the songs.
What was it about the drums?
I don't know. I think I just wasn't skilled enough as a guitar player. I took piano lessons as a kid. I loved that. I just loved the drums. I don't really know why. I went on to play bass for some of my bands for a few years, but then this gravitated back to the drums. Certainly not a talented drummer, but just enjoyed playing.
Sure. When did you start your band again? So you gave up when you were 25, or not gave up, but moved on to more serious pursuits, I suppose. But then once you'd got up here, you started what was the first thing that you did to get back into the music?
Well, somebody somehow learned that I had played drums, and I was on Channel 2 by that time. And so I was invited to come and audition for a band called Out of Control, which became Chill Factor. Mm-hmm. And they rehearsed in this tiny little mobile home park. And so I walked in, and of course, here's these, great musicians. Steve Rychetnik, on bass was terrific. And Pete Garrity on guitar. Bill Thomaser, this monster keyboard player. And Lucy Darling was the lead singer. Mm-hmm. And so, of course, nobody thought this dweeb news guy coming in. And after about the first three songs, it was like, okay, you're in. This is fun. Because you had a drummer who sang. That was the main thing, right? So that was the start of it. And I played with that band for 17 years.
A story a few years ago, I'm telling the audience this for their benefit, because you know this, but I gave you a DVD of a concert by a band called James, which is an English band from Manchester. And this was their farewell concert in 2002 when they were splitting up after 20 years. And they were an awesome band. And I gave it to you because the performance by the drummer in the concert, I thought, was just awesome. And they, coincidentally enough, had auditioned him because their previous drummer had left. And he'd only been with the band for the shortest amount of time. And he had an audition with the band. And in the sleeve notes, one of the other band members had said that when he, the drummer, had come in to do his audition, it was like so different from the other drummers. Mm. It actually felt like the drummer was auditioning the band. He was that good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm. When you've got a drummer that good, it really kind of drives everything, doesn't it?
Oh, well, think of Rush, right?
Another band that I really—they're Canadian, of course. Which I'm English, So,
what is that? What does that mean?
Well, it's kind of—I suppose. I don't know what it means. Because, of course, starting with the Beatles, so much of English music took its influence from American music.
Right, and then gave it back.
And then, then when I grew up, which was largely in the 70s and early 80s, kind of going through my teen years, English music stood kind of on its own. You didn't really need to mess with the other stuff.
Oh, the Mersey beat, come on.
It's kind of really in those days, seriously, American music from across the pond didn't really cross over very much. Right. Anyway, your third song, sir.
Okay, so my third song is a song that just is special to me, only because it came out in 1973, and at that time I was 17, and I was working in the garage of the Swedish hospital. My dad worked in the X-ray department there, and my job at the age of 17 was to take all of the X-ray films out of the X-ray department and store them in the garage as they worked on the new X-ray department. So I would be down there, and it was cold, and this song would come on about every 5 minutes. And and that's not why it's meaningful to me. It's just, and this is a little maudlin, but it's just, why it's meaningful to me. Among the X-rays that I came across was my mom's X-rays. My mom had passed away just 2 years prior. And while most people had, you know, two or three X-rays in their files, my mom probably had, you know, probably 100 X-rays because my dad, being in the department, for somehow, you know, was able to get her in. And just for whatever reason, my mom had 10 times the X-rays of these other people. So that's my memory of it. It was just being struck by the fact that that was sort of my... 2 years after her death, I sort of came face to face with just how serious her illness was. And so this song's just always been very, whenever this song comes on, it just takes me back to the garage of Swedish Hospital and filing X-ray films.
Strumming my pain with his fingers, singing my life with his words, killing me softly with his song, killing me softly. Telling my whole life with his words, killing me softly with his song. I felt he fired.